Hi, hello, good afternoon, good morning, good night, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to Visions. I am Eulalie Wickham Ashby, and today my special guest, a gentleman I've known for almost all my life, Mr. Clayton Springer. Welcome to the program, Clayton.
Thank you very much for having me. You just dated me, Eulalie.
Everybody knows you're young.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Clayton, I met you originally as a social worker, a practicing social worker. You're also a reverend, a father, a husband. So tell us a little about yourself, because I know that you're in the parish of St. Lucie. Were you born in St. Lucie?
Yes, I was very much born in St. Lucie, bred in St. Lucie, still live in St. Lucie because my navel string is buried in St. Lucie and it can't be moved.
Okay. And what would have led you to get involved in social work?
Well, that's going back many, many years. I think it was basically an outgrowth of my being born into a large family, living in a community which at the time represented what we still believe was the best days of relationships in Barbados, where the community was very much involved in people's lives, where children were early taught the importance of building relationships with all the persons in the community, including the elderly people and people who had challenges. I believe that that would have been the genesis of the seed that eventually led me into social work, which I've never left, really.
Yes, I agree with that statement. So, as a social worker, what were the main areas you would have worked in?
Okay, I would have worked initially at the welfare department, which, as you may remember, has a number of different sections. Primarily, there were two broad areas that we focused on initially. One was the National Assistance Section, as it was called then, which dealt with the responding to the monetary needs, the financial needs of persons who were indigent. And we would have had to do the usual social investigations into the conditions that took up some of my time. And then the other section dealt primarily with the counseling component, dealing with persons who were having challenges with support by fathers for children, issues that dealt with marriages, particularly challenges after the marriage. We had to prepare reports for the court at one point in time in relation to children who were in need of proper custodial arrangements. That was before the Child Care Board actually took over some of those responsibilities. And then we also would have embraced the portfolio with persons with disabilities. The department would have been involved with all of the organizations who were charged with various aspects of the disability spectrum. But it was persons who had vision problems, people who were, at the time it was mental retardation. We refer to it differently now, thank God, in terms of intellectual difficulties and challenges. And that whole spectrum that we would have dealt with, because at the time the welfare department in its original status dealt with nearly all the social issues that eventually gave birth to separate departments. So that was part of my remit. Until then, in the late 90s, I became more directly involved with the older person's portfolio when I assumed responsibility for the National Assistance Board as director.
Okay.
Which I served in that capacity until my early retirement 10 years ago.
Okay. Well, I want to say thank you, though, Clayton, for the fabulous work that you and your colleagues would have done during that period to really not only assist persons with disabilities, but all those who would be considered disadvantaged, disfranchised, vulnerable, because it was through a lot of work from the welfare department that would have helped to stabilize many families and also point many individuals in a more positive, productive, progressive future.
I appreciate that because I know our colleagues work really, really hard under some extremely difficult circumstances. And when, you know, we get together sometimes and we can reflect on those days, it was a very difficult, difficult work that we had to do. Going places that when you reflect, you wonder if you had lost leave of your senses. Going to some very tough areas to deal with some very tough clients under some difficult circumstances. And in those days, it was not considered to be off the record because you did what you had to do. You weren't thinking about your own safety sometimes. It was the client's interest that was primary. Mm-hmm. And particularly when it came to children's issues or older persons' issues, personal disabilities, those were the areas that really galvanized you into taking course of action that nowadays I think you would have second thoughts because the society is so different in terms of its approach.
Right.
But the social workers of that generation would have worked very difficult conditions. And of course, the ones who went before me would have had it even tougher. Mm-hmm, and I think it was on the basis of knowing some of those old social workers that people of my generation then would have been motivated to really give of our best as well.
Well, we certainly appreciate that. Now, from your beginnings in social work, when you would have started working with persons with disabilities, to now in the early 2020s, what are your thoughts in the type of progress you've seen made in relation to persons with disabilities?
I would say, well, this would take us now back into the 1980s, when I really would have started working with personal disabilities. Looking back over those years, almost 30-something years, we have made some elements of progress. But unfortunately, I have to concede that there is so much more that we should have achieved by now. I think what we can say is that over those years there has been a bit more public awareness of the various disabling conditions that exist, and even some new ones that weren't very much known 30 mm-hmm. years ago.
Yes.
So there is a bit more public awareness at a general level. There is some more openness, I would say, by persons with disabilities and some of their families in exposing a disabled situation in their home. So that I think is a fairly big plus, that the society has been sensitized to a large extent. And this is where an organization like yours would have to take a bow, because I think from the early beginnings when Barnard was initiated, it was based on Barnard's movement, a grassroots movement at the time, that I think really brought to the public's attention the issue of disability. Other organizations would have been around longer, but in terms of the bit of explosion that we had, it was primarily based on Barnes's own position. And we then saw some developing public awareness, which has increased over the years, which it has been good and phenomenal. The good thing at the top government level is that there is now a National Disabilities Unit, which didn't exist at the time, which some of us would have agitated for in the 90s, if my memory serves me correctly.
Correct.
But I think we have so much more distance to travel in terms of policy, in terms of legislation, in terms of regulations, in terms of a definitive approach that is taken to the education for a person with disability. Unfortunately, we still have pockets where many children with disabilities are left unattended or not getting the level of assistance that a normal child would get. In the so-called ordinary situation at pre-primary and primary school level, the kind of struggle that parents with children with disabilities have to undergo is not the same as the parent of a normal quote-unquote child. And those kind of disparities, I think, still are glaring impediments in our progress. So from that early educational experience, we have challenges. We also, as you come up through the ranks, there's still a bit of a struggle in terms of overall provisions for special needs students. And those disparities, I think, remain a block on Barbados's system in terms of how caring, how we identify with the vulnerable of our miss. So while we have made some progress, like I said, in some areas, and we thank God for the areas of progress in different schools that are being opened now that are for children with disabilities, the facilities. After school, that again then is another problem.
Oh yes.
In terms of employment opportunities. I am really glad that a number of persons have been able to access university education, having come through primary and secondary school. And well, to go back a bit, I can very vividly remember when the first vision impaired student went to Combermere some years ago. That was a big thing. They had a tremendous achievement. And that was the beginning, we thought, of great things. Then after that particular student moved on, there was a bit of a vacuum in terms of other persons going through, but that was clarified after a while. And even though there's still one, two challenges that are encountered at secondary level to some extent, I think we have proven from the perspective of person with disability that there is the capacity to manage university education. And the fact that university has moved in the area of ensuring that the facilities are adequate for, but fairly adequate for children for persons with disabilities to study. I think my biggest concern now is after university education, what next? I believe there are still some persons who have access that level of education who are still unemployed.
Definitely.
And it will be argued that this is a situation in the general population as well. But I believe that there ought to be some affirmation of a person with disabilities, ability and capacity so that they are considered, you know, as being, I want to say deserving, but they're Barbadians for the most part. And there is a reasonable expectation, especially in a scenario where persons with disabilities have been agitating for a particular cause all along, to have a special look at person disabilities as far as the employment situation is concerned. Those are the areas that I'm concerned about as far as the academic area, education area is concerned. So we have made some progress, but like I said, there's still some areas that we need to go in.
Well, definitely in the area of employment, we see that while there may be the argument as, you know, that so many other Barbadians have a master's or bachelor's degree and they're unemployed as well or finding it difficult to be employed, we still have to look at the reality of the situation, because for the persons without disabilities, with their qualifications, they also have a greater option of traveling and working outside of Barbados. While for persons with disabilities, there are some countries that do have restrictions on persons with disabilities entering their countries apart from, you know, a vacation or holiday. Yeah. So they're not granted citizenship or residency as easily as that.
Right.
So, you know, some of those factors and those variables make a difference when it comes to employment for persons with disabilities.
That's right.
You know, and like you said, I'm in total agreement with that. We really need to look at a clear policy and a national agenda as to how we will move forward when it comes to dealing with the rights of persons with disabilities. Right. How do we incorporate and really include our citizens with disabilities in every possible sector right. within our society?
Mm-hmm. That, I think, is the crux of the matter. Are we as a nation as committed to the whole concept of inclusion and integration as really we would need to be? I believe that we are losing out on the tremendous abilities and capacities by not ensuring that we can get the best of the potential of persons with disabilities out in the open and exploit it to the fullest extent. And that, to my mind, is a need that we have to correct. Where we see not the disability, but see the person who happens to be disabled. And whether we like it or not, many of us have a difficulty. Now, if I were to stop using my spectacles, I'd be in serious problems. There are some persons who use prostheses, their teeth, their false teeth, as we say. And they're acceptable. We've got to reach the point where we see physical disability, yes, as a foot is gone, but a person is functioning. But beyond the physical disability that a person may have that you can see, the other dimension of the what we call the hidden disabilities does not mean that a person is inadequate in every respect. I remember my first encounter with of severely vision-impaired gentleman years ago. This was in the 1980s. I could not believe, as he was moving, handling computers, handling projectors, setting them up, and he was just flowing, I mean, without a stop in any of his fluidity. I could not believe that this guy really had what we now know was full radical blindness. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But he was so confident because the society in which he was reared made it possible for him to function. And his own sense of identity, his own sense of self-worth would have been facilitated by the environment in which he was reared. So while he would have had challenges, his home environment said to him, "You may be blind, young man, but you're going to do everything that has to be done in this house." And that's the kind of approach that we have to be able to impart to our families in Barbados. That whatever the disability may be, the child, as he grows, as she grows, ought to be exposed to whatever the other so-called normal children are being exposed to. Because ultimately, it's the child's self-concept which is buttressed by the family's awareness that this is my son, this is my daughter, and she or he is as special as anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So from the family's dynamic into action, right into community, we have to get that kind of thinking that while this child has some issues to be dealt with, we're going to deal with them, and the society will know that we approve and accept and we are integrating. And if that flows through every phase of the child's development, it will eventually be the best thing that would have happened, because that child is not seen as any less important or seen as inferior to other children. So it goes from the family, and how the family approaches it then will be determined how the school system treats that child and ultimately into wider society. But it has to be a society that is aware. It has to be a society that really demonstrates interest and care. And it has to be a society that is prepared to move whatever obstacles are there, so that the whole balance of equality is evident. The whole concept of integration and inclusion is not just spasmodic, but is the reality across the board. When we can reach that point, I think we would have done ourselves a very beautiful service as human beings in Barbados.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, Clayton, let's look at the role of the family
mm-hmm.
in terms of, as you were saying, building that self-concept and mm-hmm. confidence.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. within the individual child or member with a disability. So how do we nurture that child, that confidence, that real awareness of who you are as an individual with a disability, and, you know, reaching for the stars, as you would say, within your own limitations?
Okay. I would emphasize that while the child with a disability may have some inability in some respect, that can be minimized by the family's acceptance of the child. If there is across the board family acceptance that this child may have a difficulty hearing, have a difficulty seeing, have a difficulty walking, have a difficulty speaking, they need to be that awareness that we will compensate. If we have to do the extra coaching, spend the extra time, we will do this. This has been awareness, of course, that the family is given good quality information by the medical personnel that they come into contact with initially.
Yes, that's because needed.
I think that is critical. Some families find difficulty understanding what really is quote-unquote wrong with my child. This is where the professionals have to be willing to spend the extra time to explain in simple terms what is happening. Well, I know nowadays there's the computer, there's the internet, and you can go on that in a hurry and get a lot of information. But still, sometimes that information has to be broken down in a manageable way.
Yes.
And that's where the professionals come in. Where the professional is the medical doctor, or where the professional, as it oftentimes turns out, to be the social worker. Because the medical, the nurse, the doctor, they may say, well, okay, this is not my specialty in dealing with the families. So the social worker who may be involved or who is brought into that whole network of support personnel may very well be the one who has to do that kind of intensive work. And I'm speaking from experience, huh?
Right.
In terms of being able to explain. And then in terms of accessing services that may be available, this is where the social worker comes in. So that network of professionals has to be involved in assisting the parent or the family to understand what is happening and to open doors in some cases that the family may be unaware of. Now, that is in a situation where the child now, having been accepted by parents, the parents are in the position to meet all of the, let's say, the myriad appointments that they usually have to make. That is where some kind of additional support may be needed, because we know that services are located in places, sometimes that require two bus fares, transportation to get you there. And that is where the whole network of services has to be working to the benefit and for the benefit of a family, for the disabled child in the midst, who may not have all the monetary resources. And that's where perhaps the government services will come, whether it's the National Assistance Board, whether it's not for money, but for transportation assistance, but certainly by the Welfare Department to provide assistance. So I'm looking at a situation where the child has to be in an environment that assists him to develop a sense of confidence and competence. Now, if in those scenarios the parents are given that level of support, they are then better able to spend the extra time working with the child who may have a disability. The kind of dedicated time. I am glad that I am seeing a lot more, like I said earlier, awareness being demonstrated. The papers are carrying stories of parents who would have had some difficulties, but who fought through the system and refused to say, to take no for an answer. And they have produced well-rounded children because they have an awareness. Mm-hmm. So when we have all those systems working together, the child's interests being central to everybody's commitment, that child has a better chance of being reared in an environment that is facilitative of his own development and competence. But it starts in the home situation with the parents being involved from day one and being willing to go against whatever barriers are there, pushing beyond the boundaries, so to speak. That is how self-confidence in children is developed. And that's what we need to be doing more of.
I certainly agree with that. So Clayton, as the time is catching up with us, briefly tell us, how do you see policy making a difference in the lives of vulnerable groups like persons with disabilities?
Policy is a very important aspect of the whole process. It will clearly spell out what we intend to do, how we're going to do it. And then the regulations that go along with that, as it becomes legislation, will set the stage. And of course, that policy should be informed by the persons with disabilities themselves. Now, even though you may have a policy in place, a policy cannot shape attitudes. That has to come from the individual. So awareness, experience, and willingness to change has to be evidently demonstrated by general public. But policy sets the broadest level of platform that says we're going to do X, Y, and Z. This is the vision we have for this particular sector of our population. This is our view or value of this sector. And therefore, that then will mandate certain sections of the population to do certain things that will then revolve to the benefit of the person with disabilities. But it's critical.
Yes, because sometimes you would hear persons making the comment that policy what, legislation what, that's not helping me to have food to eat and, you know, some of the basic needs that they have. So I just want to...
Critically important.
Yes.
The same with the policy and legislation to give them authority to discharge their responsibilities. We need policies for person disabilities that will ensure that certain things are in place and will drive the process.
Well, Clayton, it really has been very, very useful and helpful chatting with you today, and we didn't even get through half of what I wanted to discuss. So I'll have to invite you back again, where we can more focus now on persons aging and acquiring disabilities. How do we cope with this large percentage of our Barbadian population? And again, looking at policy and programs to really help these individuals.
Okay, well, when the time comes, we will respond.
Yes.
My pleasure to be here. And my pleasure to come back if you so desire.
Well, I so desire. So, well, I want to say thank you very much to Clayton Springer for coming and sharing his thoughts with us and really helping us to think a bit more broadly around disability issues. And I want to also say that I want to thank you, the listeners, for listening to Visions and sharing this link with your friends and co-workers. Remember, you have been listening to Visions with me, Yodali Wickham Ashby, and my special guest today, Mr. Clayton Springer. So you can reach me on 1-246-269-9660. That's WhatsApp as well as a regular mobile call, or via Starcom 1-246-430-7300. And of course, you can email me. Thank you very much for those emails and those comments and suggested topics at visionsbarbados@gmail.com. So that's visionsbarbados@gmail.com. So until next week, do be safe and be productive.